what's happening in your hometown? Let us know. Call the KGLO Liveline on the Tim Fleming Show at 494-2500. We're your hometown news station, AM 1300 KGLO.
That's exactly what I just did. I answered the Liveline, and lo and behold, a friend of mine's on the Liveline this morning. It's John Skipper. John, how are you doing this morning?
Doing well, Tim. How about you?
Well, fantastic. Yeah, we're just charging ahead, and I wanted to check with you for a couple of different reasons. But number one, you've got a book out that is called "No Time for Journalism, Boys, Just Type," which a newspaper reporter's memoir. Now I understand that title, just being in the media.
Sure.
Kind of talk a little bit about how you came up with that and how this whole book came to be.
Well, the book is a memoir, I guess, but my intention in writing it was for it to be kind of a tribute to newspapers, which are falling by the wayside. I was every day. I was just reading the other day that a fourth of all daily newspapers have closed in the last 15 years. It's hard to believe. And 300 have gone down just since 2018. I started newspaper work in 1965. This is my 55th year in newspaper work. When I started, it was right sort of the crest of the golden age of newspapers. A lot of the other media, radio probably being the exception, hadn't risen to the limelight as much as newspapers were. There was a time when people depended on the newspaper for to find out what was going on in the world, and that's just not happening anymore. But my entire 55-year career has been in community journalism. But having worked most of that time in Iowa, you get a taste of national news as well, primarily because of the Iowa caucuses and that sort of thing. So the book is a kind of a remembrance of lots of different things that I've been fortunate enough to be involved in. And Tim, you can relate to this. It's not about me. It's about the profession I chose and all the opportunities that profession has afforded me. So that's what I try to convey in the book. So there's chapters on various incidents that have happened over the years. There's chapters on various fascinating people that I've come across, everything from Harold O'Brien, who became a state checkers champion at the age of 85 and taught me how to play checkers. I thought I knew, but Harold taught me. Hobart Duncan was an old ball player for years and years in Mason City. And people from that walk of life all the way up to presidents and presidential candidates. So that's what I've tried to do with the book.
Yeah, an old ball player, he'll want to make sure everybody can bunt, right?
Exactly, exactly. And demonstrated it for me with a knife standing in the middle of Perkins Restaurant one day, talking loud enough for everybody to hear. I might tell you, Tim, that you mentioned the title of the book, No Time for Journalism, Boys, Just Type, and people who are in the media probably know what that means, but it's what it has to do with deadline, is deadlines, you know, which are it's the deadlines of the lifeblood of newspapers, and have been. That's one thing that hasn't changed in 50 or 55 years. But the title comes from a friend of yours and mine, and somebody who's very well known in North Iowa, and that's Tom Toma, who worked for the Globe for over 40 years and now happens to be on the city council. But when he was the sports editor, he would have reporters go out to games at night, football, basketball games, and that sort of thing. And they would come back, and young people who wanted to write the Pulitzer Prize-winning story about these games, and Tom was looking at the clock, and he'd look at them and say, "No time for journalism, boys, just type." And I thought that that might capsulize what I was trying to do in the book, to show also kind of the inside look at how newspapers are produced.
Oh, so true. So true. I love the title, and I certainly know about deadlines and all of those things, too. And, you know, the other thing that struck me in this, and you just touched on it a little bit, John, when you're talking about we in this business of media, whether that's newspaper, radio, broadcasting, whatever, we do put ourselves in and find ourselves in positions where we do get a chance to meet and see some very, very interesting people. I mean, just the list of presidents, you know,
sure.
and political people. And obviously, Iowa becomes a hotbed of politics with the caucuses and things.
Yep. Particularly in the last few caucuses. Sometimes not for the best of reasons, but you're right. Because of the professions that we hold, we come in contact with a lot of, I'll say, famous people. And entertainment as well, with all the entertainers that come to the surf ballroom and the NIAC programs and so on. But I need to say, Tim, that with the famous people and the politicians and the presidents that come by that we make contact with, for me, and I'm sure it is with you, some of the most fascinating people I ever met in my life are sort of the common everyday people that get up in the morning and slug it out and make a living and come home at night and watch the same kind of television programs that we have. And one of the things I've learned over the years is that everybody has a story. You know, you could sometimes you might strike up a conversation with somebody that you've known for years, maybe not well, but still you know who they are, and you sit down at a dinner table with them sometime, and they'll tell you the most fascinating things that you never knew about them, because everybody has a story.
I was looking at the different chapters too, and just to give people an example, but you've got the ball player, and you've got President Trump, President Obama, President Clinton, the Bushes, mm-hmm. Walter Mondale, President Ford, Mason City, the Iowa caucuses, war heroes, the other plane crash, the bank robber, and all of these. One that I looked at again this morning, too. It made me smile, too, because it's the obituaries.
Yes.
It's page 95, but I go to it, and I still smile when I read. It says, obituaries, he's not dead yet, but he will be by the time your paper comes out.
Actually happened. and funeral director, that was a deal where a funeral director called me. It was a Saturday night, and it was about 11 o'clock, and he called one to know if it was too late to get an obit in the paper, and I said, no, but we're right on deadline. You got to tell me right now. And so we just went through it, name, age, and then I said, and when did he die? And that's when he said, oh, he's not dead yet, but he will be by the time your paper comes out. And I said, well, sir, we don't have many rules about obits, but one of them is. You know? So, anyway.
Make me laugh, I have to tell you.
And that particular chapter has all sorts of examples that have happened over the years with obituaries that some of them are funny, some of them are just strange, but particularly when you're dealing with relatives, it's a very obvious, it's a very sensitive time in their life, and so you have to be careful, particularly if you're not able to do something. For instance, most newspapers now require verification from a funeral home before they publish it. So if you come into the paper, or most any paper, and you want to get something in the paper because your aunt died and she used to live in Mason City, and so here's all the information and so on and so forth, and you say, well, okay, but what funeral home? Because we have to verify it. And the main reason, Tim, that newspapers have to verify it is at one time, one of the practical jokes that people could play would be to come in and give the newspaper an obituary on a friend of theirs who was still alive, but it was just a practical joke. And it wasn't a joke to the newspaper when they found out that the person wasn't dead. And so that's one of the reasons why most newspapers now require that a funeral home verifies it. One time I dealt with an obit in Mason City where a fellow came in, and he gave me all the information, but I told him it was going to have to be verified. And he was okay with that. But when he was listening to survivors, about this fellow, he said, he mentioned brothers and sisters. And then he said, and his good friend, George. And I said, well, you know, we as survivors, we have to list just blood relatives. We can't do friends. That's just not our policy. And the guy thought for a moment, and he said, okay, well, let's make him a brother. So when the obit later appeared in the paper, the fellow who died didn't know it, but he had one more brother. So things like that happen. So there's a lot of humorous incidents that happen in the book. There's some tragic ones. There's a story in there about something that happened in Clear Lake years ago, where a mother jumped in the water to rescue a son who was having trouble in the water, and she rescued him, got him back on the boat, but then she went under and she died, and it happened on Mother's Day.
Oh, yeah.
So here's this mother who saves her son and loses her own life. So, like I said, the book is a mixture of things, and trust me. And here's another thing that you'll be able to relate to, Tim. Exciting things don't happen every day, you know. But over a period of years, you can develop a pretty good collection of them.
Oh, for sure.
And that's what we've done.
I had to note here too that it was nice to see in memory of Sandy, your wife, and and your family members are mentioned in the book too, which is really great. And I'm sure a big salute for the family, because in the business, as long as you've been in the business, they have to live it with you.
They make a lot of sacrifices. They sure do. I have to tell you that I started on this. My wife was ill for quite some time before she passed away, and I would go over to the hospital and sit in the room, sometimes 6 or 7 hours. We've all been through that with one relative or another, and it's not unique to me. But sometimes you're in a situation where you don't want to leave the room because something might happen, even if you go to the cafeteria for a moment or two. So I wound up staying all day and was looking for things to do because she was practically in a coma. And so one day I brought some notebooks up just to fool around and try to write something just to pass the time of day. It happened in my career. And so I jotted them down in longhand. And then when I went home at night, I thought, well, what the heck, I'll just transfer this to my computer. And then after she passed away, it was good therapy for me, actually, to try to continue with this. And I thought, well, you know what I'll do? I'll just put some of the stuff together, and it'll be I'll put it together for my kids, just some memories. And 2 years and 80,000 words later, it's a book. So that's how it started. I don't dwell on that a lot because it's fairly personal, and also I don't want to give the impression that I'm trying to profit from her death or something like that. She knows I'm not, but you know what I mean. So anyway, but that's how it started. So actually, the book started out being written in longhand.
John, something else, and I know if people are listening right now and they're saying, okay, how do I get John Skipper's book, No Time for Journalism, Boys Just Type, a newspaper reporter's memoir? How do they find this, John?
Well, the easiest way to do it is to just go through me, and I just tell you the book sells for $21.95, and if people are interested in it, they can contact me at 707 6th Street Southeast in Mason City, and I'll make sure that they get a copy.
Outstanding. I know I had a number. Oh, you've written what? How many books? 17, 18?
Yeah, this is the 17.
This is 17? Yeah. And I know I have a number of your books. I had purchased books that my father was a big reader and always loved sports books and things like that. And I got a number of books of yours that he enjoyed. And when he passed, I wound up getting those books back, which is really cool. So I've got them in my collection, too. So
good.
This is a nice read. This is a really good read. I got to ask you, too, your take on the coronavirus, the pandemic we're in right now, COVID-19. None of us have been through anything like this.
No. I have a daughter and son-in-law and granddaughter who live in Seattle, where all this started. And we hear about New York and necessarily so, but it really started in Seattle, and so the kids have been out of school there forever, and I became aware of it earlier than the seriousness of it earlier than a lot of people did. I guess my immediate reaction is that wearing the mask and keeping the social distances obviously works. And they're two pretty small sacrifices compared to what can happen if people don't do that. And just to tell you real quickly, in my case, I'm going to be 75 years old in a couple of months. I have a lung condition that requires me to be on oxygen. So if for the people who choose not to wear masks for whatever reason, and that goes, incidentally, that goes right to the top, but that's a pretty selfish decision on their part, and I want to live a long life, but I certainly don't want to have it shortened because of somebody else's selfishness. So that's a very pretty, you asked me what I thought about it, that's what I think about it.
John, I appreciate your time this morning, and I don't know why I haven't had you on sooner than this. And you know what John Skipper would say? Silly me.
Silly me. Silly me. Well, I'll tell you what. When baseball season starts again, we'll have a lot to talk about. You call me sometime, and we'll talk about extra innings where a guy starts on second base. But that's another half hour discussion, isn't it?
That's at least a half hour discussion. John, okay. It's always fun talking to you. You're a great guy, a great book, and I wish the very, very best with this. And we're going to talk again real soon, my friend.
Good. Hey, thanks a lot, Tim. I sure appreciate it. Take care now.
You too. Take care, John. It's John Skipper, everybody. He's got a new book out. It's called No Time for Journalism, Boys, Just Type, a Newspaper Reporter's Memoir. Tim Fleming on AM 1300, KGLO.